You're listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.
G'day, Cam.
G'day, Rich.
How are ya?
How the fuck are ya, mate?
Not bad, mate.
That's good, mate. How are you enjoying retirement, Rich?
Yeah, it's good. Well, I don't know. If you call writing books every day retirement, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I reckon 99.999% of the population on this planet thinks you ain't working.
Is that because of my Flickr photo?
No, but it's a very... You are a very attractive man, Victor. No, but, you know, I mean, you know, let's compare what you and I are now doing on a daily basis to what the majority of the people on the planet do on a daily basis. It could hardly be considered working under any true estimation of what hard work is, right?
That's correct.
That said, I'm completely exhausted. I feel like I'm doing the work of 12 men and I'm exhausted. I could sleep for a month, I think, about now.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's, well, you've obviously been very busy in the last week because I noticed there's hardly been any blog entries and there's been no G'day Worlds.
I did one last night from the car, but yes, mate, I have been very busy. My head in spreadsheets and lawyers and just, it's killing me. And that's the side of this thing that, you know, I don't particularly enjoy. Dealing with investment bankers and lawyers and accountants and... I'm like, oh, just, you know, you're getting in the way of me having fun.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, I don't actually, because I haven't had anything to do with them yet. I'm just enjoying the fact that I don't have to... It was weird on the weekend. I thought, wow, I don't have to... I'm just so used to starting to stress on a Sunday afternoon about the fact that I got to go into work on Monday, and I didn't have to last weekend.
Yeah. For people tuning in who aren't familiar with the situation, Rich Giles, host of The Gadget Show on TPN, blogger, author, man about town, social philosopher.
That's interesting.
Quit his job. Formerly business development manager at Sun Microsystems for... How many years were you there, man?
I was there for 9.
9 years! Man, you go so far back. You can remember when Sun was actually important.
I remember. Well, actually, it was... So I joined Sun... Let me see. I think it was about a year or so after Java was released, and they were going through boom times, like big boom times, bada bing, boom, you know, all that kind of stuff. there was, and I went to New Orleans when obviously it wasn't in such a bad state as it is now, for SIGGRAPH, which is a God knows what it stands for, but it's basically the graphics. User group thing that goes on once a year, and it's massive, you know, like you've got thousands of people there, people from Pixar. I was sitting next to one of the guys that first started Pixar. He was one of the coders, and you know, you're in this bus and you're sitting next to this guy having a conversation with him, real trippy. But we had the second biggest booth at the event, because the biggest one was SGI. I bet they don't have the biggest one there now. It all runs on Windows, right?
Yep.
Microsoft have probably got the biggest booth there now.
Probably.
And massive, so they must have spent a fair portion on that, because I went over there for rotation. And then we had a party. The Sun event booked out the House of Blues in New Orleans, and we had Belushi, whichever guy isn't dead, play a gig for the event. That's how obscene the late 90s were.
Ted Belushi, I think, is the one that's not dead.
Ted?
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
It's Jim.
Jim, that's
John's,
the one.
John's dead. Jim just should be dead.
Now, who's Ted? Is he a mate of yours?
I'm just making that shit up, man.
Hey, before we go any further, have you got... is the battery charged up all right? We don't want to lose this call or anything.
Oh, smart ass.
And you've got your your, what was it, slim latte or whatever it was.
My skinny latte. Actually,
skinny, that's the one.
I'm drinking a double shot espresso. I just went downstairs before. That's why I was a few minutes late making an espresso, because I'm so fucking tired. Swear to God, I've got, like, after this, I've got meetings all afternoon, and I'm on the verge of just cancelling them all again. I'm going back to bed, kids, because I'm just rooted. I don't know if I can push myself through another meeting. I'm exhausted, man.
Yeah.
So I've got to drink lots of coffee and see if I can find a crack dealer or something on the way.
Well, at least you're drinking a man's coffee, not this bloody skinny latte.
Yeah, you were giving me a hard time about the skinny latte. You said if I ordered a skinny latte in Perth, I'd get beaten up.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Thanks. It's so tough, you guys over there. Hey, let's talk tech news, Rich.
Yeah.
Tell me. Konica Minolta announces withdrawal plan for camera business and photo business.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. No, I didn't, but who was it the other day? Was it Nikon that also announced they were getting out of standard film cameras or something like that? Was it Nikon?
Yeah, is that right?
I thought it was a Nikon. People better go check that before committing to it. But it was one of the major manufacturers. Yeah, man, it's all, you know, all that kind of bullshit's dead, right? It's all going digital. And, in fact, SLRs are interesting because, you know, I mean, you use a similar one to me, and so you know what I mean, and so you can get some really good photographs. But all the other ones, you know, a few years' time, forget about it. I mean, everybody's getting them in their phones, so why bother?
Mm.
Snapshots and all that will just be using your phone, which will also be your MP3 player and all that kind of gumph. So it doesn't surprise me at all. In fact, a whole bunch of businesses would be mad not to get out of that business now, otherwise they'll just go under.
Yeah, but Konica aren't just, Minolta aren't just getting out of the film camera business, they're getting out of the camera business altogether.
Yeah, but that's my point, right? I mean, there's only going to be specialist companies, like, you know, Canon and Nikon maybe in the high-end cameras. Otherwise, if you can't compete in that area, then there's no point. And realistically, that'll just be a niche. I mean, you'll be serving a small market, so there's not a lot of money in it. Do they say what they're going to do then? Because they probably do other stuff, right? They do other electronics.
I think they do photocopiers and office machinery and that kind of stuff, but
yeah, so they're better off sticking to that where there's actually going to be margin.
Hmm. There you go. I thought that was a big announcement.
It is. It's cool.
The other thing that interests me today is this stuff that the Bush administration is demanding search data from the search engines. You've been reading on that?
Oh, that's disgusting. I'm marginally upset at this point in time, and I might get even more upset later. Yeah, I think it's...
Hey, can I tell you my favourite joke of all time?
Here you go.
I may have said this on a show before, I can't remember. Here's my favourite joke of all time, I swear to God. A good mate of mine in Bundaberg, who I caught up with when I was up there, because he told me this when we were six at primary school.
And it's going to be good then.
Still my favourite joke of all time. What's the definition of disgusting?
I don't know.
When you take your undies off, throw them up against the wall, and they stick. What's the definition of very disgusting?
I don't know.
When you take your undies off, throw them at the wall, they stick, and then slide down.
It's more, isn't there?
What's the definition of totally disgusting? What? When you take your undies off, throw them at a wall, they stick, slide down, and then slowly start to crawl back up again. Sorry, you just made me think of that with the disgusting. This is from Search Engine Watch this morning. Bush administration demands search data. Google says no. AOL, MSN, and Yahoo said yes. They're getting this from John Battelle and Google Morning Silicon Valley. I think that's supposed to be Good Morning Silicon Valley. Well, maybe it is Google Morning Silicon Valley. I don't know. Yes. Anyway, the San Jose Mercury news article, Feds Want Google Search Records, covers the Bush administration demanding last year that Google and other search engines turn over aggregate search information to help revive a child protection law. Google has refused to comply with the subpoena. A motion has been filed this week by U.S. Department of Justice to force Google to hand over the data. In particular, the Bush administration wanted 1 million random web addresses and records of all Google searches for a one-week period. The government apparently wants to estimate how much pornography shows up in the searches that children do.
How are they going to know? But besides that, right, okay, I can understand if the law needs to do subpoenas to do this so that they can catch pedophiles, et cetera, et cetera. Because, you know, that's, I understand that, but I think they're just crossing over the line when they're actually using the data to develop laws. I don't think that's right. I don't know. There's some ethical thing swimming around my head that hasn't quite come out yet that's telling me that's just not quite right. But besides that, how are they going to fucking know who's doing a search?
Well, I like Danny Sullivan from Search Engine Watch's comment. they want to know how much porn is turning up. He says, here's a thought. If you want to measure how much porn is showing up in searches, try searching for it yourself. Which I'm sure that, you know, George Bush isn't doing anything else. God knows he's not ending the war in Iraq. You know, he's not finding Osama bin Laden, so what the fuck else is he doing?
Yeah, he's got to stir something else up.
He's not stopping hurricanes from destroying New Orleans. I mean, he's probably just searching for porn. That's my take.
Yeah, that's all he does anyway,
monkey
isn't it?
Monkey porn. Really? I bet you'd be into monkey porn. You reckon monkey if there's porn. Any kind of porn, I reckon he's into monkey porn. Look at that monkey.
Well, then he'd get Bama, wouldn't he? From Microsoft popping up all the time.
Yeah, you're very funny.
I don't work for Sun anymore. I don't have to pan Microsoft.
Yeah. So retirement, mate. I know that feeling. You know, I've been out of work for 18 months now, and it did take a while. It took a while for me to, you know, get into the swing of, you know, life on the outside. Well, I can't imagine going back now, though.
There's a couple of things for me, and it seems to be the case in just about everything I do. I always assume that when I make a change, I'm going to feel a lot different. And every time I do it, I don't feel any different. And then 6 months later, I look back and I go, wow, I actually did that. You know, so when I moved to Sydney with Sun, when was that? Probably about 8 years ago. I thought, you know, I went across and then it was only looking back in hindsight that, wow, that was pretty spinny, but I never actually felt like it was a massive change. But then the other thing is I've been working so bloody hard on this Flickr book. It's actually gotten to, it's near the end, almost completed. Well, I've done half of the edits and I've got a bit more of one of the chapters to do and then edits for the rest of the chapters, and then it's almost done.
I was talking to Ian Dixon last night, Media Centre show host, and he was telling me he's been listening to a guy who's done a Flickr podcast.
Yeah, there's a couple of them.
And I was suggesting that, you know, we should either get this guy in or get you to do the Flickr podcast. I figured you're not sick enough of Flickr yet, you need to do a Flickr podcast.
Well, it's not too bad. I mean, I know I said to you I'm probably going to be sick of it, but it wasn't as bad as when I wrote the podcasting book and had to listen to 100 podcasts. That got a bit too much. Whereas Flickr's kind of mild. It's not too bad. It's not like your chocolate cake, you know. It's like a mild dessert that you can probably keep on eating more as long as you're not seriously full.
Yeah. So what does a Flickr podcast sound like? What are people talking about? Oh, you know, you can't see this right now, but I'm looking at this great photograph. And it's actually got a dog and a tiny Mexican person.
Well, it's the same as writing a Flickr book, right? You'd go, wow, that sounds interesting that you're going to write about stuff that we can all go and look at. But, I mean, besides the fact that it's a how-to. But they talk about features. So there's a bunch of... Well, there's always new features in Flickr. Almost on a monthly basis, there's bound to be several new features. So they talk about features. They talk about groups, because there's some amazing groups. What's a really cool group that I've been looking at? Camera Toss is one that pops to mind. Have you heard of that one?
No, what's that?
So you get a camera, preferably not expensive, and you either set it on the timer or you set it so that it takes a longish exposure and you throw it into the air, and you probably need the room to be darkened and stuff like that. And the resulting photographs are these blends of light. So it's actually pretty arty. It's really cool. Probably get sick of doing it after two or three, or you drop your camera. But there's some really interesting photos, and then there's some amazing groups. I mean, you just do a search for a few of them. So they talk about some groups, and they talk about stuff that goes on, like one, it was actually, so there are two Well, they were two Flickr podcasts. One of the guys hasn't really been doing it. Thomas Hawke, I think his name is, who's fairly well known in the Flickr groups. He went to the one Bush building in San Francisco and was taking photos of the building. And the security guard came up to him and told him to stop. So he thought, okay, move to the sidewalk to continue his photography. And the security guard followed him and said, no, I want you to stop. And he said, well, I'm on public property here. You know, I'm allowed to take photographs. And the security guard said, well, we own the sidewalk. Like, bullshit, right? But so anyway, luckily, this guy was taller than the security guard, so he carried on taking photographs while the security guard was trying to place his hand in front of the camera. Apparently, it went on for like 10 minutes or something like that of this Thomas walking around the building taking photographs with the security guard trying desperately to stop him. You can just see it in some movie, right? Some black comedy or something like that. And eventually, Thomas had to go off and do something else. He had some meetings or something, so he left. But he posted about it on his weblog, and a mob blog got together, and they all converged on the One Bush building and started taking photographs on one weekend.
So what's this Bush building? What building is it?
It's just a fucking building. Right. Just do go to Flickr and do a search for One Bush, as in O-N-E Bush, as in George Bush.
Okay.
And you'll probably find the actual flash mob photographs or something like that. So I don't know what it does. I'm assuming it's just a building that, has probably got businesses in it, but the security guard was suggesting that this guy... Well, okay, there might be some security concerns, people checking it out, but hell, man, just go Google Maps. It'll give you all the information you need to know. So
they're all using these days, Google Maps.
Yeah, that's right.
Suspecting terrorist.
Did you see Target are now putting big Target logos on the top of their building, so that in things like Google Maps it's advertised?
Very.
Which is kind of stupid, because if some stupid terrorist gets it all wrong, they're going to be looking at the Target thinking that's where they're going to hit.
In fact, you'd be changing the name of your business altogether, wouldn't you, if you were Target right now?
That's right. Not the Target or something.
So what else has taken your interest lately, buddy?
Oh, heaps of stuff. What else? Second Life has consumed a bit of my time, as you know.
Oh, you rocked up for the Larry Lessig thing? Book launch?
I did. It was good, but it was not what I was expecting. So for everybody who's listening who doesn't know what we're talking about, Second Life is a virtual world, and the interesting part of the virtual world is that you can create things in it. So you can create objects, buildings, you can buy land, you can sell stuff as well, and people are actually selling stuff on eBay. You know, the old story of making something in a game and selling on eBay for real money. And the interesting thing, though, is several years ago, Lawrence Lessig, Professor Lawrence Lessig, I don't know where he's a professor at, but he's well known. He's a lawyer and legal expert, and he specializes, I guess, in copyright and, you know, ownership of property and or whatever else. And he's written several books, and everybody...
The professor of law at Stanford, man.
There you go. And I might see if I can go visit him when I go to ETEC. Hopefully he'll be at ETEC. And he suggested to the people at Second Life, Linden Labs, who created it, that the people within Second Life who create stuff, they should get the IP of whatever they create. So they own it, effectively. So, you know, Second Life or Linden Labs doesn't actually own the intellectual property of something somebody else created within the virtual world. So anyway, they said, yep, that's a good idea, and have done it. And, of course, there's a whole bunch of repercussions, and it's just a fantastic world to go and see, and people they make avatars for you, so you can buy avatars off people, and you can people have learned how to skydive in the game, so you can go and learn from them how to skydive, and they'll sell you a parachute, and yeah, you bug it if you don't buy the parachute, right? So and all these really interesting things. So anyway, they had Cory Doctorow in the world several months back doing a virtual signing of his book, which I missed, which is a shame. But Lessig was in virtual in Second Life yesterday, and basically you had to register in a group because there was only a limited amount of seating, and you go to this auditorium in the world, and you can sit down or stand up or fly around, whatever you want to do, and listen to Lawrence talk about interesting stuff around intellectual property and copyright law and stuff like that as it pertains to, you know, the internet and virtual worlds and all that kind of stuff. Now, I expected it to be an audio stream or something like that, but there wasn't, whether or not it was because I stuffed up, but there were a lot of people that were expecting it to be audio and I don't think got it. So it was actually like a, you know, like you go into an IRC chat room and it was basically text-based, which in some respects was good because you could be distracted and then go back and look at the history and catch up. Mm. But on the other hand, you've got to really be focused on reading the text, whereas listening is kind of a background task, I find, so I can actually be surfing while I'm listening to somebody speak. Mm. But yeah, it was good fun. Hung around, and then they did a virtual signing of the book. I don't know, you know, what that's going to mean. I got it signed in the hope that in a couple of years' time, Second Life is massive, and the Lessig book signed book is worth several $1 million in US dollars or something like that.
So tell me exactly how that worked. How did he sign a book virtually in Second Life?
So this is all part of how people have created stuff. So I think there's a guy in Second Life. I don't think he may be part of the Linden Labs team, but I think he actually might be just a user. As he figured out a way of how you could create a book, and you can actually sit down in the virtual world and flick through the book and actually read it. You can put it up in front of you and read it on your computer screen. So anyway, he figured out a way of being able to sign it. Now, I don't know what that means and whether or not there is actually a signed image on it or not, but basically you put the book down near a particular place at the particular signing, and he runs a script which then makes that particular book a signed copy of the book. So you've already got the book, you picked that up earlier, or you picked it up a couple of days beforehand, like I did, from a location that they told people about. And yeah, and then it becomes an autographed copy, as opposed to just a standard copy in your little backpack or whatever you've got. So, yeah, as I say, I don't know if it shows up as it's got a signature on it. I actually had to leave pretty quickly after it all finished because I had some meetings that I had to go to, but I'll explore a bit more later. But I took some photographs or snapshots, and I've put them on my Flickr account, and people can have a quick look in there. But somebody made an avatar that looked, you know, like Lessig, so, you know, they make it a little bit more authentic.
I was doing a show with Father Bob McGuire a couple of days ago, yesterday actually, and I was talking to him about Second Life. He wants to build a virtual church in Second Life where he can give communion to people from around the world, virtual communion.
Really huge. Could be done? Yeah, yeah. I reckon, yeah, I mean, it's a good idea. Let's see now. Yeah, I'd love to see the repercussions of that as well, because I'm sure that, well, I mean, I know a lot of people in the United States are pretty religious, and I think, you know, they'll, you know, it's although whether or not the demographic that plays Second Life for that particular people, but it'd be an interesting, you know, I know it's not an experiment for him, but it'd be interesting to see how it works in a virtual world.
It kind of is an experiment for him. I mean, his big thing is how does he use technology? Not bad for a 72-year-old bloke, by the way. His big thing is a 72-year-old Catholic priest. How does he use technology to extend his reach and extend his message globally? And so I was sort of showing him some of the video clips that people have taken inside of Second Life, and he's into it. But the problem is I don't know anything about how to set it. I can't even get it running on my desktop. As you know, I keep getting this Intel graphic chipset needs to be upgraded error, and despite trying to upgrade everything and talking to the tech support people at Linden, I still haven't been able to get it to work. So,
yeah, you just upgrade it to a Mac, mate, then you'll be sweet.
Well, isn't a Mac just a PC now anyway? It's just a more expensive PC, really, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's got Intel inside.
I was listening to the Geeks of Hazzard show, the latest one yesterday. Have you heard that yet, Van and Kev?
No, I haven't had a chance. It's good,
check,
is it?
Check it out. They're funny guys, yeah. And geeksofhazard.thepodcastnetwork.com. And they were saying something about the ads that are starting to appear for the Intel-based Macs.
Oh, really?
And it was something like, what were they saying? That the Intel is now cool? Or what was that?
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to remember what the ad is. Damn. I got to look it up. But, yeah, apparently there's a lot of really cheeky ads coming out now about that Apple are putting out about how, Intel is actually now cool
as opposed to
something.
Running hot. Yeah. That's all interesting.
Not cool as in cool, man. Cool as in cool, you know?
Yeah. But they're having a jab at the fact that Intel's usually hot, though, aren't they?
No.
Oh, maybe they're not. You should see, just getting back to Sun Microsystems, because I can't let it go. Jonathan Swartz did a funny post on his blog last week where he said that, Dell's still are now advertising like we are because they've got some, system that runs, too hot, because we did an advert. I knew it was going to take months for me to stop saying we.
I tell you, it took me a year to stop saying that when I would be discussing Microsoft related stuff.
Yeah, it's bizarre. So Sun did an advert where they were basically taking the piss out of Dell, saying that the servers just ran too hot, as in, they would melt. And so there's an advert that he saw that where Dell were saying that they were hot. Not in the, the heat sense, but in the hot sense. And anyway, he thought it was amusing because it made it look like they were advertising the same thing Sun was, whatever.
Hold on a sec, man. I'm just watching an Intel Mac TV ad.
I hope you're streaming that into the podcast audio, mate.
No, I don't think I am. I don't think everyone's going to be able to hear this except me.
Well, you should splice it in later. Just to give you some more work.
That's pretty cool. So, apple.com/intel/ads, they've got some TV ads. They've got one set inside the Intel labs with, people wearing the space suits.
Yeah.
They're talking about, for 25 years, Intel chips sat in boring little beige boxes. And now, now they're doing something cool and,
Man, I want to get one so bad. I want to get the dual core.
This is the thing I was referring to before. This, if you go to apple.com/Intel, it's got a big graphic that says, what's an Intel chip doing in a Mac? A whole lot more than it's ever done in a PC. and I think it was Kev on the show was saying that Intel were like, we don't really want to go around saying, anyway. There you go.
All the conspiracy theories are starting to come out. You've heard all the stuff that that some slides were pulled at the last minute from Job's keynote?
No.
Yeah, apparently this is the rumours that some slides were removed just before the presentation went up, and some of the speculation is that there's some interesting things like, being able to run Windows in I know it's been done before, but running Windows on one of the Intel Macs, perhaps in virtual containers, or perhaps being able to run actual binaries from Windows or something like that. But there's all this speculation going on that the reason why it was pulled out just at the last minute was because they didn't want to give Microsoft the heads up, because, of course, they've been, talking up Vista and all that recently. Did you see you probably didn't. I posted a link to a video of a Vista presentation by Bill Gates a couple of weeks ago. Did you see that one?
Not one from CES, something different?
Yeah, no, it's hilarious because it takes Gates' voice and audio and puts it over the top of somebody demonstrating OS 10 on the Mac, and he's saying, it's transparent here, and then it shows the bit that does transparency, and then you can do search, and then it shows the search thing that the Mac's already got. And basically everything that Gates was saying, it was already in the Mac anyway, so I thought that was funny, being a Mac user.
Yeah, and it's great now that, people will actually be able to get to use that functionality. rather than the seven men and a dog that actually use Macs around the world. I was talking to somebody again the other day. I had a friend over from the US last week, and we were sort of chatting about the fact that still in Hollywood films, every goddamn Hollywood film you see, whenever they cut to a character using, you know, a PC, they're using a Mac. Usually they're using a PowerBook or an iBook or something. Like, every movie. If you trusted what you saw in Hollywood films, you'd think that the entire world ran on Macs, apart from, you know, as opposed to the five people and a dog who actually do use Macs.
But you know they pay
very
for that,
cool,
don't you?
Dogs, by the way. They pay for it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really? It's all product placement?
Yep. My brother works for Nokia, and he's been in negotiations with different filmmakers at different times to place Nokia phones. So, yeah, if you see a Nokia phone, if you see a Mac, if you see any decent product, that's been paid for.
Well, I knew that, you know, when you see a shot of most stuff it is, but I didn't think the Mac thing was. I just thought that was...
Yeah, no. If you're making a movie and you can make some money out of it, you're gonna give a few vendors a call and say, we'll put them in, you just got to pay us the dosh, otherwise Dell's going to do it.
Man. I thought when you said Jobs had pulled some slides, I thought you were going to say he'd pull the slides talking about how iTunes was tracking your information about what you had in your music database.
Been one of the first to break the news because everybody was at Macworld and he got a bucket load of traffic out of that, and he was getting calls from like NBC to go on a video call with him to talk about it, but he can't because he's in a remote area of France. But yeah, interesting. I noticed there was some other announcement in the last couple of days, something to do with it, but I don't know what it was. But
Apple has said that they're providing a way for people to turn it off.
Yeah. It actually broke my... it actually broke the stuff that I was actually using.
So they had this thing called the Mini Store pane in the latest version of iTunes, which is supposedly providing music recommendations to iTunes users based on the songs currently in its playlist. But to do that, it was sending information about what's in your playlist back to Apple. I don't know if it's a big deal in and of itself, but if they start reporting things like, well, actually, all these tracks have been ripped and there's no licensing on them, or they've all were downloaded from a BitTorrent server, I don't know. I guess that's where the concerns start to come in.
Yep.
Apart from the fact that Apple were just doing it, not telling anyone that they were doing it, which, there's been enough hoo-ha made over that. You hear what Sony are doing now for their... compensation for people that bought their dodgy DRM CDs?
Committing harikari or whatever it is that they do? I hope so.
No, not as much. I think the deal is if you take a Sony DRM CD back into stores or back... I don't know where you have to take it. That you can get either three free album downloads from Sony. You get a clean copy of the CD, plus you can choose to either get three free downloadable albums from their catalog of about 200 that they're making available, or $7.50 US compensation.
$7.50.
Yeah.
Wow. They're so generous.
Yeah.
Well, I got to check that out. I bought a Foo Fighters one a few weeks before iTunes Store came out here in Australia, and I think they're on the Sony label, aren't they?
Dunno. I don't listen to them. But you'd have to imagine that if they're pricing these three free albums as a value of $7.50, it's probably like as my old housemate Carsten said on the Geeks of Hazzard show, it's probably Shannon Knoll 2, and Shannon Knoll 3 that they're making available to you. They're going to be crap albums, right? They're going to be the best of Milli Vanilli or something like that.
Hey, that's probably worth a bit now, you know. I heard that in the movie studio the other day. My wife pointed it out. I wouldn't have known. I can't remember who they were. I don't know what they sung, but she goes, is that Milli Vanilli? And she goes, That's obscene.
Your wife's obviously very hip.
Yeah. Hey, did you just get this spam on Skype?
Just now.
I need to do it. Somebody's been spamming us or something. Who is it?
Oh, overnight. Yeah, we got this big. And that's the thing. Yeah, somebody, killyourfm.com, some idiot who's on our spam, was on my spam account, said I blocked the mother after he did that last night, set up like a group chat with 50 people in his Skype list to ask him to fill out his PodTrack survey. And of course, the problem with these bloody group IM chats on Skype is even if you shut it down, as soon as anybody on that chat responds,
say something.
Fucking pops up again. The window pops up because you're just on it. You can't kill it, to the best of my knowledge. So, yeah.
But not only that, if the person that he's spammed isn't on your list, you get to see who they are.
Yeah, yeah. You turn up on the little right-hand sidebar there.
So it's like doing a spam and just putting them in CC, not in BCC or something, and you just get to see the damn world. And yeah. Please.
Ho, ho, ho. At this point in the conversation, I tried to shut down the big spam Skype thing and managed to cut off my call with Rich as well. So that's all. Go about your lives. Go on. Stop listening now. Turn it off. Go and do something. Change the world. Don't expect me to do it for you. Go on. Run along now. Rich and I have both quit our jobs. We're out there trying to do something. What's your excuse? Bye-bye. Ta-da. Are you still here? Turn the damn thing off. Go on. Go write a business plan. Go try something. The idea's not just going to come to you in the middle of the night, you know. You're not just going to wake up one day and, you know, God will have placed this brilliant, genius idea into your brain as to how to change the world. You've got to start. You've got to get off your ass. Seriously, you can't just sit here and think it's going to come to you. I don't know what you're waiting for. I'm not going to tell you. I don't have any good ideas, and even if I did, I wouldn't tell you. I only ever had one good idea in my life, and that was to do this podcasting thing 18 months ago, whenever it was. I'm not even sure that was a good idea. Well, look, you're just wasting my time now. I mean, I can't go until you go. I can't hang up until you hang up. I'm not going to hang up first. I'm not going to be the hanger-upperer. Fine. Well, if you're going to be like that, you can listen to an ad.
How would you describe Matt Freak and the Fat Boy?
Comic explosion of shite.
Human excrement.
Fat Boy, you've got 5 seconds and I'm cutting off your mic.
Ask me how much mini cheese.
Time's up!
Matt.
I don't know what Scouts is all about. Old men, young boys.
Freak!
I'm the Fat Boy.
I've been set on fire. By Matt.
Keen!
No, it's the sort of name that sticks in the mind.
Sketches?
So that's what they made you today, chub goblins.
But not too much hair. It's tiresome to plug.
Engage Super Turbo Launch.
God, what are you...
G'day, Daniel. It's Ross.
You're a jerk. Tom, thank you for your time.
Freak bags.
Can you help me off this chair? Top 10 best things about being friends with a deaf person. Moving out of your girlfriend's house. Vomiting on your mate's carpet. Fat Boy's film of the week. 10 seconds or less, what's the plot?
Not the hair, not the hair, not the hair.
Matt, Freak, and the Fat Boy. Music that no one's heard of.
Jokes that no one laughs at.
And masturbation. I think that describes it best.
Right here on the Podcast Network.
The Podcast Network.
Are we getting paid for this, by the way?
The Podcast Network. Real power can't be given.
It must be taken.